Live to see it, friend, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-author, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Friday. How are you, my friend?
Man, glad to get to the end of the week, but man, this has been an interesting week. We have covered some ground in the shows this week.
You know, we've talked about robotics and artificial intelligence. We've took a stab at solving the world's problems. By the way, that was an amazing show we did on Wednesday, and I think we failed to acknowledge that it was Amazing Wednesday, but we were all over the amazing on Wednesday. And here we come back on Friday talking about one of my favorite things, just all things space, visitors and messages from the stars. And this was just so cool. There were these two stories that I saw on the same day, within a few hours of each other, last week, that just kind of speak to the times we're living in. We're living in a great age of discovery, Stephen, and we don't realize it. I don't think we think about it to the same extent that people a few centuries ago, when new continents were being discovered and news from strange exotic lands was coming back, people knew then that they were in a great age of discovery. I think we've sort of, I don't know, grown numb to the fact that amazing discoveries are being made. But these two comet stories really got my attention. The first one, citizen scientist spots comet tails streaking past distant star. Okay, so I love every word in that headline. Okay, is that?
Yes.
And this is just awesome. Okay, you got a citizen scientist, so somebody who's not even a real scientist, looking at data from the Kepler Space Observatory. And the guy's name is Thomas Jacobs, and what does he see? Well, he sees what is almost certainly a comet tail passing in front of a star, okay? Now, we've seen planets out in interstellar space before, but this is the first time we've ever seen a comet. We've figured they're out there, but nobody's ever seen one before. And now this guy, who's not funded, you know, he's not a big, obviously he's using the equipment of a major well-funded research project, but he's just a citizen scientist, and he has discovered the first non-solar system comet that's ever been found. This should be a huge story, right? And yet, I don't think it's gotten nearly as much attention as it deserves.
Oh, yeah. I bet you, and we've got a fantastic audience that stays plugged in, but I bet you 90% of the people listening to this show had not heard this news. This is just not being talked about, and it's an amazing story.
It really is, and good for him. Good for you, Thomas Jacobs.
Yeah.
And good for all the citizen scientists out there looking at the Kepler Space Observatory data. And everybody, keep it up. Let's see what else we can find. You know, when we do one day definitively find proof of extraterrestrial intelligence, it'll probably be something like this.
Somebody looking at the data and going, "Hey, wait a minute! This is not what we would have expected. You know, there's something strange here." And they keep looking deeply until they, here's the aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but Tabby Star, you know, only
exactly.
That one gets disproved and then reopened every like 3 months, right?
That's right.
Last time we heard it was disproved.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it gets reopened in about 3 months. But meanwhile, we can just bask in the glory of the discovery of a comet. And speaking of comets, how about this? Here's a headline that really should be bigger than it was. Did you see this one? Mysterious object from deep space has entered the solar system. Now, that one, they give you that headline so you're going to read it and go, oh, well, we've all seen this movie, right? We know how this starts, right? We know how this ends.
And it's slowing down.
Yeah, it's slowing down. That's right. What? Yeah, exactly. And it goes by the moon and it knocks the flag over and all that stuff. But, in fact, it turns out, what is the mysterious object? It's a comet, another comet.
Yeah.
But the angle that it's approaching the sun from indicates it is not originally part of our solar system. That, in effect, we're looking at a rogue comet, a comet that came from the direction of Vega, may have been one of Vega's comets, or may have been a comet orbiting some other star, who knows, a billion light years from here, that has headed off on its own trajectory in the galaxy somehow. I can't imagine that anything good happened that would allow that to happen. But the point is, this is somebody else's comet, okay? This is a comet like the one in the first story. It belongs to a completely different star system, and it has entered our star system. And I'm trying to think, has that ever happened before? Have we ever identified a body within the solar system that we knew originated elsewhere?
No.
I don't think so, now, right?
No, we've got in our solar system, we've got some strange planets and things like, for example, I think Uranus is at has a weird orbit. It's not quite on the same plane with the
It's a little off the plane. That's right. And it spins funny. It indicates that weird destructive things have happened in the recent past in the solar system, but I don't think anyone has seriously suggested it came from elsewhere, or have they?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that it's a captured planet, but it's
right.
something weird was going on with it, but I think you're right, Phil. So if this is the case, then we've got not one but two news stories back to back that would seem to lay to rest any argument anyone may have had about whether or not there were comets elsewhere.
If anyone was worried about that, look, we got comets. We're seeing them out there in other stars, and they're coming to us. Okay, so the comets are out there. But if they can confirm, if there's some way of, probably not 100% confirming, but if they can raise the certainty that indeed this body did come from elsewhere, this is something we need to send a space mission to, right? I mean, we need to go look at an extraterrestrial comet, although it could all be a trap. I understand how naive I sound right now when I say these kinds of things, that, we could get there, and that's exactly, they knew that's what we would do, but I don't know.
We got to have a different word than extraterrestrial. All comets are extraterrestrial, right? So
true. Extrasolar. Yes, it's extrasolar.
Extra soul or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
We have to come up with another word. You're right. If it'd been possible to get some kind of probe out to this thing, that would be an amazing mission. We could learn a lot.
The analysis of the melt some of the ice, see what's in there. Don't bring it back here. Because we have seen the movies and we know what happens, right? But
nothing good. Yeah,
probably nothing good is going to happen there. Who knows? It might be a bunch of microbes with the IQ of 10,000. Going back to yesterday's show, but I kind of doubt it. So we won't we won't take any unnecessary chances there. Anyway, incredibly exciting stuff. And there it is. We live in a fantastic age of discovery. Now, how about this next one? Reports of spectacular UFO, giant glowing ball lighting the sky in Siberia. You see these pictures?
It's amazing.
Everybody follows the
link. I've actually witnessed something like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as a quite young man.
Stephen, were you in college? I mean, we don't have to go into too many details.
No illicit
substances involved. Okay,
substances
go ahead.
Were involved.
But
it was about 11 o'clock one Saturday evening, as I recall. I was probably about 20-21 years of age, and it was amazing. This the light came across the sky, and it was slow. It was relatively slow moving. It's not like a streak across the sky like a meteor would be. This thing was, it was a big ball of something glowing and hot in the sky. I actually stopped my car, got out, and I could actually hear the thing in the sky. It was a roar. And then it disappeared over the horizon. It was reported in the newspaper the following day. Local residents, it was like 1,000 calls to 911 or whatever. It was
sure,
and it was they just determined it was a passing meteor, and apparently it never touched down. It skipped across our atmosphere and did not come in.
But it was skimming the atmosphere, and you could actually hear that from the surface.
I could hear it. It was amazing, and it was relatively slow moving. It had,
but
had that
was that a
hit,
big ball
been,
like this, or was that more of a streak in the sky?
It was a big ball. It was a big ball of, you know, big glowing ball in the sky, and it was very bright, and it was fantastic. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Now, when did this happen, Stephen? When did this happen?
Well, let's see. If I'm currently 48, and I'm saying I'm a young guy of about 21. Do the math.
You've had 11 years to give us this tale of the paranormal,
story.
And you've been holding out.
Hey, I'm going to just say, Phil, I'm kind of a big deal, and I've got.
Yeah, we have not begun to plumb the depths. I understand.
Plumb the depths of all of.
There's a lot there we have yet to. That's why we got to do another 700 shows, right? We just got to keep
that's
going.
Right.
So
you'll hear all.
Eventually, we'll tease these things out of you, huh? Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
So this, what we're seeing in this picture, everybody, you need to follow the link to look at this. What we're seeing in this picture kind of looks like what you saw.
Exactly like what I saw. Yes.
Wow.
It was amazing. So
okay, so what's great about this is...
apparently happens, you know, probably with some regularity. It's just that they're not always seen. You know, if something were to skip across the Pacific Ocean sky, you know, not too many people would see something like that, right? So
Right.
It happens with some regularity, I'm sure.
It's an amazing set of photos, and one of the things that this says to me on the subject of tales of the paranormal is one of the reasons you have to turn kind of a jaundiced eye towards UFO stories is you never get pictures like this, right?
Yeah.
If you get pictures like this, it always turns out that there's a perfectly rational explanation for what happened, right? There's always a good story. And in this case, it was simply that they had launched a rocket. Now, my comment on this was, and this will be my weekly reference to my Disney vacation because I try to bring it up every week. When I was at Walt Disney World a couple weeks ago, we actually, coming out of Epcot, looked up in the sky and there was a rocket that had been launched from Cape Canaveral. So we got to see that for just a few seconds because we looked later than we should have. We didn't know it was going to happen. It was just one of those happy accidents. And that was a streak in the sky. I mean, that was exactly the rocket effect that you would expect. It looked like the way you would design it in your mind. You know, it looked like a picture of a rocket going through a sky. They're saying this was a rocket test, a rocket launch, and somehow you get this big ball of light effect. Is it because we're that far north and all light turns into some kind of aurora borealis thing, or, you know, why does it look like
that? I don't know. But
well, that says to me that it wasn't a rocket, okay? It says to me that they're doing some kind of secret experiments that they're not telling us, okay?
I don't think it's a rocket. I really don't. So.
Yeah. Well, what you saw was something skimming from the outside of the atmosphere into this one.
That's right. And it was obviously a natural thing. It was a meteor or something. It's funny, the following day I recall telling my family about it, and they were all like, "Oh yeah, Stephen, he's telling us UFO stories." I never said it was aliens or anything. I saw this amazing thing in the sky. Well, of course, then it hits the newspapers, and like, you know, all these people said they saw it. I said, next time you're going to believe me, right? So, and all these
and they're
years,
like, no,
been a next
we're
time.
Not, yeah.
No, exactly. you're full of crap. We know it.
Well, I like the one witness who said, I think it's a break in the space-time continuum. I think they're clearly doing some wacky experiments up there in Siberia. And anyway, I love looking at the pictures, and I think it's cool that it's real. And hopefully it was just a rocket, but very mysterious-looking images. Still, I'm somewhat reassured that maybe it was just a rocket by your story, because if things like this happen sometimes, I guess things like this happen, unless you're a Russian plant. How much do the Russians pay you to say that, Stephen? I'm on to you, man.
I'll never say.
All right, what do we got next? Strange messages coming from the stars are probably from aliens. This is actually about a year old. I just saw the link, and it just seemed to fit in so well with all these others. And I put the word out. I said, has anybody heard anything on this? Since I believe we talked about it about a year ago. Basically, astronomers looking at the chemical signatures of stars. I don't think it's even been a year since we talked about it. Looking at the chemical signatures of stars and or their radio frequencies, and there's a few anomalous ones out of hundreds of millions that indicate they might be signaling something to us. They might actually be sending us a message. Pretty elaborate theory that they put into place as to how that might work, and then they went looking for it, and lo and behold, they found it.
Yeah.
So I had linked to this.
What makes this neat to me, Phil, is that the stars that seem to be acting anonymously are not anonymously, but
anomalously. Yes.
Yes, that's the word. Yes. Those stars that are acting that way tend to be yellow dwarf stars like our own.
Uh-huh.
And so that's pretty neat. That's a neat little thing, a little tidbit that perhaps stars similar to our own are the ones that tend to have life around them. So I find it neat. But what did you find? Is there any updates on the story at all?
Well, Jab, who pointed out to me that I was retreading an old story, and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so. But hey, has anything new happened with it? He said that actually the BBC did a whole show about it, and I'm looking for the link on that. I haven't been able to find it yet. Of course, here we only get BBC America at best, so we don't get all the same shows. But if it's up there on the web, I haven't found it yet. So I'm still looking. I'm still looking to see if there's an update on this. If you read the story in the comments, some people are very skeptical about this, and I think probably the biggest point of skepticism is they went in and they predefined and said, hey, if we find this, it means life, and then they went and looked and they found life. You know, it sounds kind of fishy. I mean, there's a little bit of a, are you sure you didn't check first, right, and then decide what the criteria were for saying that there were intelligent signals out there. I'm not saying they did that. I'm saying that's how a lot of people respond to this story
read it. It's a bit of the called shot, you know, like Babe Ruth, you know, pointing to the left field or whatever. Which makes for a legend, right? If you happen to hit a home run to left field, so
right.
You know, maybe it's just a remarkable coincidence. Maybe they knew what the data would show, and then they made a theory to back it up, and they worked in reverse, right? Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, what if Babe Ruth pointed every time, and he was almost always wrong, but that one time, everybody noticed, right?
That's the one. That's right.
No, that man's a genius at hitting, right? I'm not saying that that's the case, but this is very interesting, and it goes to what we were saying in the first story, is that when we find life out there, when we make a big discovery, it's going to come through interesting, unexpected channels. I would never have thought of this, right? We'll look at their radio signatures and see if there's markers that indicate that there's a technological civilization going on there. But also, swinging it back to Wednesday's show, one of the big IQ 10,000 problems that we didn't get to was looking for life out there in the universe. This would be a great problem to put a very intelligent machine on, because it might think of ways of getting at that we're not thinking of. It might make connections that we're not thinking. Because even if this was a called shot, and even if there's flaws in this technique, it was a brilliant idea. It's a great idea to look for that. And I think we've got to find new innovative ways to look for life out there if we expect to find it, because it may not necessarily be trying all that hard to be found. So we got to get clever.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what would be just remarkable about something like this is, what if this way of finding it, it's like, you know, the blinders falling off of our eyes and we're surrounded by civilization.
Right, right.
Wouldn't that be a remarkable thing? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I think you got another spooky Halloween topic too there, right? Going back
to
Tuesday's show. Okay, speaking of spooky, what lies beyond the edge of the observable universe? This is just a fun piece to read, but especially follow the link and watch the video. I've seen this guy a couple times before, but his explanation of why we can't get to the edge of the universe and what might lie beyond there, and just the description of the fact that there are galaxies we can see that we can never get to is just—it's one of the best things I've seen in quite a while. He really makes it interesting and really drives it home. We don't get any kind of answer to the question, because obviously there is no answer to the question. But spends a little bit of time talking about whether the universe is completely flat or just mostly flat. And of course, if it's completely flat, it's infinite. And he talks about the implications of a completely infinite universe. But if it's not completely flat, then it's enclosed. And if it is enclosed, what's outside the enclosure, right? So it's one of those great, you know, speaking of your college years, it's one of those great stay up late, and talk about it till your head hurts kind of questions. And what's great is here we are in the year 2017. We've made all these astounding discoveries. We just discovered two interstellar comets, for heaven's sake. We found all these planets. We understand the structure of reality so much better than we used to. We got dark matter. We got dark energy. But I don't think we have a better answer to the question, what lies beyond the edge of the observable universe today, than we have in my lifetime or ever, right? I think that it's as big a mystery today as it ever was. Unless I'm wrong, Stephen, maybe you know the answer.
I think it's just more universe. two words, more universe, Phil.
More universe.
There are places beyond which light it hasn't had time to get to us. And the universe is expanding at such a rate that it will never get to us. And it's the reason that the night sky has darkness to it, right? And not every point that you look at in the night sky is as bright as the sun, because it's a good thing, right? Because the universe has expanded so much that some things are just outside of our light zone and will forever be outside of our light zone. So anyway,
I don't know about forever, but they seem to be trapped out there outside of our light zone, inaccessible to us unless we can go faster than light or pull some other kind
of
technological trick. But I think it's great that you say more universe, because the other possible answer, I remember reading a book, a collection of essays by Isaac Asimov years and years ago, and somebody asked him, what's beyond the universe? And his answer was non-universe. And those are the two answers, right? It's one or the other.
Right.
Either there's more universe or there's non-universe. It's like, more universe makes your head hurt, and non-universe is like, well, that's not an answer, but it could be the answer, right? We have absolutely
Idea. You could say, there's the observable universe, and then there's the unobservable universe. Observable universe. So it's still the universe, but it's just not. We can't ever see it.
If it's totally flat, it's just more and more universe forever, theoretically. Right?
Yeah.
But if it's curved, then what's outside the curve? Right? What's this bubble's expanding into? What? Tapioca pudding. We don't know. There's something out there. But that's not a problem we're going to solve tonight. However, that is a great lead-in to a big old geek out. And I know you're going to tell us all about Stranger Things Season 2, but before you spoil the entire season, I want to tell my amusing Stranger Things story. I saw that the new season was up, and on Saturday I had a few minutes, so I thought, hey, I'll watch a few minutes of this. So I turned it on, and I was watching Episode 1 of the new season, and I thought, boy, this seems really formulaic, this show. They just seem to just do exactly the same stuff they did before. And I guess I got about 20 minutes into it before I realized it was like, well, they're just doing everything the same as they did it the first time. And then realized that I was actually watching Season 1, Episode 1. I wasn't watching Season 2 at all. So, I hope that you can tell us at least that Season 2, Episode 1 is significantly different from Season 1, Episode 1.
Yeah, it's not exactly the same as the as Season 1, Episode 1. And if it seems exactly the same, you did the same thing Phil did. You need to go to season.
You
got to
choose
two,
your season in addition to your episode. You can't just do one.
That's right. Well, it's interesting you did that because on Thursday nights, before they dropped the second season, and on Netflix they dropped the whole season at one time. My family and I watched the last episode of the first season again, just to kind of prepare for it kind of get us, all primed and ready to go. So on Friday night, we began watching. We watched like three episodes. And then on Saturday night, we finished it. I mean, we binge-watched the entire season. And there is a reason that we went Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday of this week with the shows is because I was completely ruined.
You were decompressing post-Stranger Things, huh?
Right. Manfield, what a great show. What a great show Stranger Things is. I would imagine that most of our audience has probably watched the first season. It's a fantastic show. I don't want to spoil any of it for anybody. Just to say that if you enjoyed Stranger Things Season 1, you're going to love Season 2. It's not perfect.
The season one wasn't perfect either.
That's
think
true.
That's true. Yeah, there are things you can criticize about about season one, and but it's just so much fun, that show. I enjoyed
the first season tremendously. If you're a child of the '80s at all, I mean this is your show, man. I mean this plugs into to everything that was awesome back in the '80s that you enjoyed it. It makes reference to it in some way or another. And here's another thing, Phil. You know, a lot of these dramas like Breaking Bad and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, things like that.
Sure.
They're fascinating shows, and they do very well in maintaining a narrative over a long period of time.
Right.
And they're much better TV than it was when, you know, let's say back in the 80s and 70s and stuff like that when we were growing up. It's just, it's good stuff. But the problem with those shows is there's nobody to root for in those shows. I mean, there's no good guy in Breaking Bad, right? I mean, everybody's out for themselves. And the worse you are, the better you do in those shows, right?
I don't think that's entirely true. Of course, we don't have time to do a whole Breaking Bad thing. But definitely the person who you follow the closest in the show, it's almost a dare. It's almost a challenge from the maker of the show saying, now do you still root for this guy? Now are you still for this guy? And everybody, I hope, who ever watched the show.
The Sopranos, you know? I mean,
yeah, the Sopranos, same thing. You reach a point and you go, no, I'm not into this guy anymore. I want him to lose. And it's like I'm actually watching the show hoping that our hero.
I think he gets whacked or whatever.
Yeah, gets whacked, rooting for people who are opposed to him. Yeah, it's an interesting transformation you make at some point on that show. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, there's a strong rooting interest in the kids in Stranger Things.
Yes, and
right? And you can wholeheartedly be for these kids because they're kids, and you like them, and you remember being a kid, right?
Right. Well, and beyond the kids, there are real heroes, and it's remarkable. Season two, there's like everybody's a good guy practically. I mean, and to the point that if that might almost be it, you might go too far in that direction, right? I mean,
that's interesting. Well, you know what? No TV show has been accused of that in a long time, right? So that's kind of a refreshing flaw, really.
Exactly. That's going in a direction that was totally unexpected. I hope that's not too big of a spoiler. But it's just every there's just lots of good guys to root for. You know, you got the sheriff, and they're interesting. They remain interesting, but there's just a lot of good guys in the show, and that's a refreshing thing. So, and I Phil, go watch season two. You'll love it, and you loved season one, and you'll love season two also.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to check it out and urge you all to do the same. Well, Stephen, you know what? We've reached the end of another week, but fear not, everyone. We're going to be back next week. It's going to be a huge week next week. We're doing our second installation of Fast Forward. We're going to be talking with Christine Peterson of Foresight Institute, and then the rest of the week, we're going to be talking with PJ Manny and I've just lost the name, Allison Duitman of the Foresight Institute. So we're going to be talking with those three folks all next week. We're going to be talking about the Foresight Vision Weekend coming up. We're going to be talking about interesting things that are happening with the Foresight Institute. This is going to be an exciting week. I'm already super psyched about it. How about you?
Excellent. It's going to be great.
Yeah, fun stuff. All right, well, great talking with you, Stephen. Great having you all with us. We will be back with three brand new shows next week. And until next time, live to see it.